Howdy, y'all. Welcome to Shaken and Stirred. It's a James Bond rewatch podcast for diehard 00s and franchise first-timers alike. My name is Evan Atkinson. I am joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Alex Doherty. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty all right. How about yourself, my friend?
You know, it was good. I'm ready to watch this, honestly. I'm working like a dog.
Like a dog.
Working like a dog.
All working day. 9 to 5.
It was
9 to 7.
9 to 9. Working 9 to 9. It's not a way to be sustainably employed, but you know, whatever. It gets it done.
Get her done.
So I'm very excited to watch this movie.
Me too.
Live and Let Die.
Meeting a brand new man.
Our first Roger Moore movie, which is thrilling. Thank God George Lazenby's boring ass is out of here. It was a sad farewell to Sean Connery when he came back. But
he was dying anyways.
He looked sickly and old. And I think we'll find through the Roger Moore movies, he looks even more sickly and old.
But hot and old, right?
Well, we'll see. He is the oldest James Bond of all of them. I think Roger Moore is 1 year older than Sean Connery. So he is starting his James Bond career 1 year older than Sean Connery was exiting.
So James Bond is aging at the normal rate. It's just different man.
That's an interesting way to think about it. So Live and Let Die, already incredibly powerful title.
Yep.
But what do you think this movie's about?
That's a great question. I think this one's going to be about... this one... It's confusing because we've already had a dying concept and it's a brand new guy. We're going to want him to go to a brand new place. We're probably going to want that to be exciting. Mm. I feel like he's going to go to multiple spots. I think we're going to go to China and I think we're going to go to South America. So I'm going to do those two regions. And I know that's one is a continent. And I think that it will involve embezzlement.
Okay. All right. I know a good bit about this movie. I've not seen it all the way through. I've seen the first 30 minutes, but I know where it takes place. Okay. I kind of know what's up. I know who the villain is and very excitingly how the villain is dispatched.
Whoa.
But it's going to be a good one. I'll save my thoughts. I want to see how accurate your predictions are from what I know. A little off.
Oh, yeah.
But it's going to be good. I'm going to call a shot. I think we're going to meet Felix again in this one.
Fuck yeah. I hope so.
A new Felix. But yeah, we're going to watch the movie and we're going to come back here a little bit more shaken and a little bit more stirred and we'll let you know what we think.
Kisses.
Oh, that's sweet. We just watched Live and Let Die, our first Roger Moore Bond film. This movie kicks ass.
It was overall a good time.
A little trepidation with that one, but
he's a cutie. I enjoyed meeting our new Bond fellow.
Because like when George Lazenby showed up, before we get into the plot of this movie,
yes,
this is our third James Bond actor that we've experienced.
Indeed.
In this watch. Sean Connery, soon as he showed up, we were like, this is James Bond.
100%.
This is perfect. We love this man. This is incredible.
Great vibes.
So good. So boyish charm. Big, thick, muscle, hairy, womanizing monster.
Exactly.
But we still love it.
Silver Fox.
Silver Fox. Then George Lazenby shows up. Who the fuck is this?
You know, full head of hair. We can give him that.
That's huge. Big points for George Lazenby having a full head of hair.
It's got some natural volume. Ladies dig it.
Ladies love it. He did better fighting than Sean Connery, but he spent most of the movie pretending to be a genealogist, and that's not cool.
It's not.
So
he fucks, though.
He fucks eventually after 2 hours. So George Lazenby was kind of weak. Roger Moore shows up. I'm all right with him.
You know, he's got a different vibe, but I'm not mad at it.
It's not bad. Like, I think the weirdest thing about George Lazenby was how in contrast with Sean Connery he was.
Yeah.
And
but also kind of similar.
He was trying to do an impression of what he thought James Bond was. Roger Moore is just like, I'm Roger Moore. Y'all deal with it or else.
Like, yeah, definitely. He had his natural ass reactions, it feels like.
His face was a lot more emotive than Sean Connery's was too. Well,
yeah, get it definitely.
Into our thoughts on Roger Moore in a second. But just to give a quick recap of the plot of Live and Let Die.
Good luck.
Starts off in the United Nations in New York City. A man is killed via an audio overload through his translating device. He's the
high-pitched noise.
It's a high-pitched enough noise in his ear that he dies. Then another British agent gets killed at a funeral in New Orleans.
He's watching a funeral. Turns out it's him.
Rolls for him. And then a third British agent is killed during a voodoo ceremony in a fictional island called San Monique. Something like that. San Monique. So we've lost three British agents. We cut to our first introduction of Roger Moore as James Bond. Obviously.
Bitch on the chest, baby.
Post-coital. The only way I can get to know a James Bond.
I need to see the chest right away.
Gotta see his chest. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Solid, not as hairy as Sean Connery.
As hairy, but he's good.
That's his own take on Bond. He's
the
hair.
You know, good nips.
Great nips. Proportion. Love the size of his areolas. So yeah, he's post-coitus. There's a bunch of rings at his doorbell. I was like, who the fuck? It's so early.
Assume he's in a hotel room at this point.
I know. We find out it's his apartment.
Crazy.
Crazy that James Bond has a permanent living situation.
Roger Moore's like, you come to my home.
Yeah, well, please, we'll film it in my place. It's M. M has arrived and informs James Bond, hey, all of our agents are getting killed. You got to figure it out. What's going on?
He's mad at Roger right away.
Yeah, which is, so here's an interesting thing. So the plot, the goof of this whole bit is M's in the apartment. James Bond is trying to hide this woman that he was just sleeping with. From M. M keeps like trying to walk into the bedroom or trying to walk in places where this woman might be hiding. Why is he trying to hide her?
I guess maybe he doesn't want to be the one that's like fucking, even though it is his own fucking house.
It's 5:30 a.m., presumably on his day off in his own house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can be doing whatever he wants to.
It's kind of. Maybe he's making a good impression. You know, he wants to be more of a gentleman. But either way, M is like, what are you doing?
You seem to be living in a home, and that's not befitting of a spy. But regardless, M's like, you're on the mission, 007. Go out, go do your thing.
And Moneypenny helps hide the lady in the closet. It's a cute little time.
It's fun. Yeah, Moneypenny shows up as well. There's no Q in this movie, but Moneypenny, on behalf of Q, gives James Bond back his back, a thing we've never seen before, but his magnet Rolex, where he can press a button on the Rolex and it becomes a very specific, very powerful magnet.
Sponsored by Rolex.
James Bond goes off to New York. He's investigating the happenings of a mobster or a criminal named Mr. Big, who controls the nightlife scene in Harlem in New York.
Bum, bum, bum.
Alex and I were very excited because we live in New York and we used to live in Harlem. But mm-hmm. We loved seeing our old neighborhood on screen. It was very fun. Then finds out, okay, hey, this thing in Harlem might actually be tied to this thing in San Monique. And he goes there and he's figuring it out. And it turns out there is this guy named Dr. Kananga, who has been producing heroin in San Monique, and his plan is to give away 2 tons of heroin for free to the United States to flood the market, drive all of his competitors out of business because they can't match the price of free.
Not a monopoly.
And he gets a monopoly, and then as soon as double the amount of people in the U.S. are heroin addicts, he's going to start hiking the price up super high so he can make a ton of money off these new heroin addicts. And James Bond is on a mission to stop him. Action ensues. That's essentially.
Hell yeah.
It's a good time. James Bond wins. Surprise, surprise.
Indeed. There's one Bond girl along the way.
We do. Along the way, James Bond meets a Bond girl who's a CIA agent named Rosie. And I did get her last name.
I want to say Turner, but that might be wrong.
It feels like just a person.
Mm-hmm.
So he meets Rosie. She is, we'll get to her, I think, in our lowlights section, probably. But she does end up betraying him and then getting killed, but not after he's had sex, as is the Bond way. Alex, let's talk highlights and lowlights. What were some of your highlights from this one?
Okay, so I definitely got to say, calling it out first and foremost, loved it being, me being wrong about the location here and it being predominant, or at least lots of it being in New York. We got a little drive through, like a whole car chase on FDR.
That was cool.
That was really fun. And then just seeing Harlem, we got like sick Harlem Renaissance outfits.
Yes.
We got just great vibes with just fits in general. I'm going to say overall highlight in terms of Bond,
good
would
fits,
have been some bad
fits,
suits. But yeah, I'll definitely say good
bad
fits,
suits, though. Good leisure wear.
Mm-hmm.
Leisure wear, some.
Unless you would consider the denim top and bottom and matching set a suit.
That's not a suit. he was wearing a wife. James Bond was wearing a wife beater, baby blue jeans, and baby blue, like,
crop jean jacket.
He looked hot as fuck.
It was really good.
That was so cool. I want that outfit right now.
Honestly, though. So I'd say that would be a high.
Something like Lil Nas X.
Oh, wait. That's actually something he's worn in a music video.
Yeah, he looked good as hell.
I'll also say I really appreciated the amount of times that James Bond just got absolutely owned in conversation.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about that. So this essentially the style, this was like a 70s blaxploitation film, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And in most of the movie, James Bond is just getting his ass handed to him.
Yep.
Like, as soon as he gets to New York, everybody that works for Mr. Big is on his tail.
Yep.
They have the upper hand on him. He shows up to, like, one of Mr. Big's social clubs in Harlem. He gets captured immediately, and a guy comes out, and he's like, oh, I'm going to do my little witty wordplay thing trick. The guy comes out and goes, I don't know, kill this motherfucker, and then leaves.
Yeah.
And James Bond's like, oh, no.
Okay. Like, this was not what I was expecting.
Like, everybody he talks to is like, yeah, of course we know you're a spy. You're a white guy.
Wearing a full F.
Double-breasted suit at Oxford. You look
doubling say to our bar for no apparent reason.
You're just this weird white British guy who's trying to order a vodka martini at my club. It's your vibes are terrible.
Yeah, he didn't even do the shake and not stirred thing.
No, he ordered a bourbon, no ice.
Yeah, and he literally paid extra for it. And the man made a point of acting like he was going to hand it to him and then just drinking it himself as his booth just spun around. Pretty cool.
That was crazy. But like, everybody is surveilling James Bond much better than he is. I wrote a note that the villains have the same, like, spy-level gadgets that Bond does. That car chase you're talking about on the FDR starts with, like, a car, a way cooler car than the car James Bond is in, pulls up next to him and shoots, like, a blow dart out of the rear, or like, the wing mirror into his driver's neck and causes it to crack. Also, something I just thought of right now, there's no Bond car in this movie.
No, yeah, he doesn't drive ever.
He doesn't drive. Interesting. Like a double-decker bus as the Bond car. Mm-hmm. There's no Aston Martin.
No.
Interesting. Okay. What? Any other highlights? If you don't have any others, welcome to Felix Corner. It's a new Bond movie in the U.S., which means we had a new actor playing Felix.
Yep.
Because there are more Felixes than James Bonds.
That's crazy.
There have not been the same Felix in a James Bond movie. I think until the Daniel Craig movies.
Well, unless they keep this fucking New Yorker, which I can't imagine.
This guy was just, I don't know. What's your view?
I mean,
Felix's review. This guy, he's got black hair. He's kind of like a New Yorker. He's kind of like, yeah, he's got everything. All right.
Whatever. I mean, I do like that he kept up the characteristic for some reason that some of the Felixes have of being kind of flirty in terms of, I'm going to let James do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Oh, James.
Like, he's going to do something crazy.
James is going to do something
crazy. And I know it. And he, like, announces it to the whole
world. All I have to do, Mr. Director of the CIA, is just clean up Jimmy's mess.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to go up with a mop. let this guy in here, me.
But other than that, he didn't leave much of an impression for me. I feel like he wasn't very helpful. And then he just straight up disappears. And there's more reference to just other people being in the CIA than like Felix after a certain point.
Yeah. This is the first time we've met other CIA agents.
He keeps running into them.
Yeah. It's lousy with CIA agents. Before, the CIA is Felix Leiter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
It's Felix and whoever he decides to count with.
Felix.
Whether it be the Coast Guard or more CIA agents.
The Marines, when they did Fort Knox, mm-hmm. Like, it's Felix Feet, a member of the U.S. military. And this one was like, the CIA is more than just this one guy.
And a fella that is Quarrel Jr.
Returning character, kind of confused about the timeline of that. But it Quarrel from Dr. No, the first character that Alex said that she wants a movie about.
Yep.
Turns out he's been up to something and it is having a son. And
well, before he died.
Before he died, R.I.P.
Oh, yeah.
Quarrel Jr. shows up in this one as a friend of James Bond, which is pretty exciting. Kind of had the exact same function as Quarrel and Dr. No as just a guy who brought him on a boat.
Yep.
Different that places.
Didn't follow him around the island, which was a good call because that is what
that's how
Quarrel
his dad died.
Killed. Yeah. Yep.
Quarrel Jr. thankfully survives this movie. Some highlights I had, the magnet watch.
Love magnet.
Oh, we love magnets. Usually like the Bond gadget, it's kind of like the Chekhov's gun of the movie. Like Q shows up in the first act of every Bond movie. He's like, W7, I've given you a briefcase that has a gun in it. And it also has a smoke screen.
Yeah.
And then in the third act, the smoke screen goes off. He used the magnet watch a lot in this one.
He loved that.
He got one gadget, and then he, as soon as he gets it, uses it to magnetize a door open where his girlfriend was hiding, and then magnetically unzip her dress, which was sick. And then
grabbed a spoon
from M with it. He like solves a couple puzzles in like the middle of the movie with it. Puzzle. I love the idea that James Bond's solving puzzles.
Like he's a survivor.
Like he gets out of a couple situations with the watch in the middle of the movie. And then at the end, he uses the watch to ultimately kill Kananga, which was like this.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the most used gadget.
Definitely.
So far.
I feel like this means a Rolex sponsorship went heavy.
I want to do more research into this, but the watches that James Bond wears are like a big deal.
Oh.
Like
the car?
Like the car. He either wears an Omega or a Rolex. It depends on the movie. Highlight for me, fucking James Bond parasailing with a cigarillo.
Oh, yeah. That's a real highlight.
Oh, my God. In order to break into the area of the island that Kananga has cordoned off for heroin production, James Bond takes a hang glider, but he's not. Like a hang glider.
Normally, straight up like a paper airplane.
It looks like a paper airplane. Normally a hang glider, I imagine someone's like laying down and it's like wings for them. This one, it looked like she was leaning up against the high top table at a bar, smoking a cigarillo, and then also just happened to be flying.
Yeah.
The posture, he was just standing and there were wings above him.
It's like he didn't know where he needed to be.
Yeah. I don't know.
I was
just kind of up here to chill. And then all of a sudden was decided to do a secret mission.
Like, what's up with y'all?
That was crazy. But at the same time, did make me feel like Roger Moore gets it.
Yep.
Like he is James Bond.
Right? Most definitely.
He is owning a crazy situation and looking suave as hell doing it.
Always. That's a good Bond moment.
Another highlight. This movie was lousy with henchmen.
Yeah.
There was. Let's list them off. We got Teehee,
mm-hmm.
which, first of all, his name is Teehee. Second of all, he's a huge man with a claw for a hand.
As one must have.
No explanation for why he's called Teehee. Also, another one of the henchmen's whole thing is laughing a lot, and he's not named Teehee. So, that seems like a wild twist. He raises crocodiles and alligators. He has a very powerful metal claw hand. He looks like JB Smoove, and he is named Teehee. So that's
all you need to know about this motherfucker.
That's one of three henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Second henchman, his name is Whisper. He is a soft-spoken man, built like Questlove. He's just a weird kind of pear-shaped guy who ambles around and just is. He just is. He's like a butler. He's just around, soft-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
James Bond keeps going, "What are you saying?" He's like, "I'm trying to kill you. I'm trying to murder you." And he's like, "What was that?" And then the last henchman, which I'm honestly the most excited about.
Yep.
Because of the mystery around him, is Baron Samedi.
A wild character.
Wild character. He's created as the myth of why the half of the island that's used for poppy fields and heroin production is off limits. It's because it's haunted by Baron Samedi. And if you go there and you believe in the voodoo religion, you will be killed by Baron Samedi.
Naturally.
He's just like a very tall, flamboyant man who wears skull makeup, but he's riveting to me. As soon as he comes on screen, he laughs like, and he has crazy makeup and a top hat.
They announced him as an actor early on, which is kind of weird.
That's crazy. Yeah, he's right? The first time we see Baron Samedi, he's in like a essentially like a Disneyland resort performance.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of white people. Look at what the voodoo.
Look at what
like
voodoo black to.
Yeah.
And it's Baron Samedi, but then all the people who actually live on the island are like, that guy's gonna fucking fry my brains if I walk into this forest.
Which we can talk about in our lowlights on why that is a thing.
What's similar to lowlights? This work.
It's just one of those like classic tropes, especially at the time of black people are more susceptible to superstition and like falling into like the quote unquote dumbness of that. It's like a very big thing you'll see in like Gone with the Wind, you'll like Onwards.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know. It's a very palatable trope. And I'm not surprised Ian or whoever directed it threw that in. Rough.
I think Ian Fleming is dead. He's definitely dead now. But I think I don't know if Ian Fleming was alive when they were making the Bond movies.
Oh, I really have no idea how much of it it's like his story or not.
They're all based on books. I found out recently the movie that's closest to the book is On Her Majesty's Secret Service. The movie that we hated because it was so boring, like a book.
Books are good. Fuck off.
Books are good, but books don't have fist fights in them as much as I need. Don't answer that.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
But it was, yeah, in like, so that, you know, we have a whole Bond girl that is
Rosie, the CIA agent.
They make to be so superstitious and like silly, which is wild because she does die from. So she's like scared of all these scarecrows in the forest, and everyone gives her all of the white people give her a lot of shit for that.
Why are you so afraid of these scarecrows, darling?
Literally, she dies by one because there's a gun in it. There's a whole gun in one. She dies in the forest, and they have a whole scene afterwards where he's like talking, James Bond's talking to the new Bond girl who's the high tarot priestess, which I don't think we've even gone through.
No, that's a whole thing.
And he's just like, "You are sensible. You're not scared of these scarecrows. Like, I think you both should be."
You should be. They have guns in them.
Or at least cameras. At the very least, they were watching you the whole time. You think you're being sneaky. They've been watching you this whole time.
That is so. If I wrote down in my notes after you said that, I just wrote, oh God, where is it? Gun scarecrows. Because, yeah. That's as soon as James Bond is talking. Solitaire, by the way. We haven't even talked about the second Bond girl who's white, so she makes it to the end of the movie.
Yep.
Her name is Solitaire, and she's a tarot card reader for Kananga. Her whole thing's pretty rough, actually. Let's get into her. So Solitaire is the tarot card reader for Kananga. He bases all of his decisions off of her tarot card readings, her reading the future. And there is a belief that she only has her magic powers because she's a virgin. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that her grandmother and her mother before her lost the gift as soon as they had sex, which is interesting because they reproduced.
Yeah, so they both just had a lot of years of just being really sad. And then when they realized their kid could do it, they were like, finally.
Yeah.
And then made their kid do it.
And then it's, but it's, it, it, you're led to believe that Kananga killed them.
Oh, true.
Because of that. But that doesn't make any sense.
Divine conception, babes. Read it in the book.
The Bible?
Yeah, that's the one.
Anyways, yes, she is, in order to do her futuristic prediction, she has to be a virgin. James Bond wasn't having that.
They announce that after they fuck, after he coerces her into sex.
Okay, let's talk about the scene, because this is crazy.
They have a bachelor kind of truth moment with her.
They first meet in New York. She's traveling with Kananga to give him readings on the road. And old Jimmy B getting absolutely dunked on by everyone around him. But he's like, white person, I can flirt with you.
Mm-hmm.
And starts talking to her. And she is like flipping her tarot card. She looks at him. She flips over the lover.
And the card that looks like her.
She's kind of like freaked out by it. And he's like, guess we're going to fuck. And then does his whole James Bond thing. Ends up going fight some people. Meets her again in Saint Monique. And is like, you and I are supposed to be lovers because you flipped over the lover card when we first met. And she's like, oh, well, it could mean anything. And then he flips over a lover card from the deck. And she's like, well, it must be predestined by the universe. We have to have sex now.
Yep.
And she's really upset about it because if she has sex with anybody, she loses her magic powers. But her magic powers told her to have sex with him. It's pretty tough. And they start kissing. And then James Bond takes the deck he drew the lover card from and pours it out on the table. And every card is the lover.
He faked her out.
And I did write down in my notes that James Bond did a card trick so good that he made Solitaire's virginity disappear.
That is so good.
It's so good. It was such a rough moment that they have sex. And he's like, that was pretty great, huh? And she's like, I lost everything that all my will to live.
Yeah.
And having sex with you has ruined my life.
Sex with you. So not terrible. Great.
And he's like, oh, you don't believe that bullshit, do you? And she was like, my whole life has been this.
Like, this is what I literally breathe for.
This is what I do. And he's like, oh, that's lame. Whatever.
Yikes.
And he's like, rule number one of being lovers is you just got to trust me, babe. And
she goes, yeah.
And then rule number two is something else. And then she's like, rule number three, you want to have sex again?
Literally.
So she's won over pretty quickly from what is an insane coercion into intercourse.
Yep.
Highlight, Kananga, great villain.
Yeah.
Yafet Kodo, I think, does a great job. He's definitely. Like, he's cool. He's very calm and collected and quiet. And then when he freaks out, he yells.
Yeah, he definitely does the freaking really well.
With some like insane emotion, which I thought was really good. But he
much
like,
better actors in this movie.
Just a really, yeah, everyone, that's true. Everyone except for Solitaire was a great actor.
It was definitely the quickest dialogue.
There was a lot of jokes. There's a pretty long boat chase in this movie.
Yeah.
Where there's that trope of like when the superhero is fighting the monster and there's a guy with headphones on that like misses the whole thing. Like they did that bit a little bit. There's crazy boat jumps.
That was fun.
There's some just genuine like good jokes. An old lady says, holy shit, which we think, and this could be proven wrong, we think is the first like genuine curse
it
in
felt
a Bond
like
movie.
There were just good vehicles as well in this one. Yeah, there's a whole double-decker car chase where James Bond is just driving a double-decker bus.
Yeah.
And he does cut the bus in half, and he drives an airplane in a car chase. Like, it's fun.
It's just fun. I don't know if this is a highlight or a low light, but Roger Moore's James Bond takes bubble baths. And maybe this is biased because I don't really take baths that much. I take showers because I have shit to do. But he draws himself a bath, sits in it, and shaves sitting down in the bath, looking in a mirror. Of course, while this is happening, a venomous snake is being put into his bathtub because, of course. But I didn't give a fuck about that snake in that moment. I was like, what would compel you to just kind of dunk your junk in some standing water and shave your face?
Terrible
verbiage. The posture was terrible. The intent was misplaced. That whole shit was insane. Out, and I don't expect you to, but if you ever catch me shaving in the bathtub, shoot me in the head.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I guess it's an easy way to catch all of the hair, but then all of a sudden
I know
sitting in it.
Yes.
No. It's just floating around you.
He didn't have a beard. He was a clean-shaven man getting cleaner shaven.
Yeah. What I will say is when I'm in a hotel, I am a bitch for a bath because it's like I have no attachments, not my water, not my problem. I am just here as a temporary being. And so I'm going to take a bath every chance I get, but not to do a utility.
But yeah, like
baths aren't for utility.
But when you're
for relaxation.
When you're in these hotel rooms taking these baths, did you have to carry a gun with you?
No.
No. You should be ready for anything.
Yeah, he gets his gun stolen in that scene.
It is like, if you are a spy in hostile territory, you only have shower time. You do not have time for a bath.
Maybe that wasn't a thing at the time.
Showers?
No, shaving in the shower.
I don't shave in the shower.
Well, where have we seen him shave regularly?
This is the first time we've seen James Bond shave.
Did they always shave in the bathtub at the time? Solo? What if it's a sign of the time?
I'll do more research. This is a note to the editor. I'm not going to do any more research. This is something that we haven't talked about, and it's shocking that we haven't. The theme song.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The intro title sequence. I almost want to talk about the theme song separate from the title sequence, because I thought the title sequence was pretty rough racially.
Yeah.
But I think the theme song kicks absolute ass.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That does remind me, part of the low light is there's a whole tribal bit. The whole, you just like throw out there is just bad.
Just
didn't
bad.
Like it. Okay, bad continue.
The theme song is Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney featuring his band Wings. It's a banger. It's a popular song. People know this outside of James Bond. It's
yeah. Like, I didn't realize that I knew it.
Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Bow. The orchestra stings and it's... Of a lot of the Bond movies, like, the song keeps coming up. In, like, there's just, like, a little piano riff that, like, hints at it. There's, like, strings that hint at it. The orchestral bits will play over and over again throughout the action. At one point, James Bond is in a club, and a singer sings the song, which is the first, like, diegetic use of a Bond song. That's the word of the day, by the way.
Yeah,
diegetic.
Nice. I like that.
Diegetic use of, like, a theme song in the movie, which I thought was really cool.
And it sounds fucking incredible.
It's way better when the singer does it than Paul McCartney.
So good, because they also have a weird, like, reggaeton, like, riff in the, like...
Okay, here we go. This is going to be a broader discussion about my anger towards Paul McCartney. I think he's insane.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney is the Nate Dogg of the Beatles.
Wow. I love that.
On that. Every song featuring Nate Dogg rips.
It yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Nate Dogg's original music, you're like, what are you up to?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, and like Ty Dolla $ign after him.
Yep.
You're like, all right, cool. Yeah.
100%.
And that's when he was with the Beatles. Paul McCartney, incredible. As soon as he went to Wings, he has to sneak in an insane bridge in every song he writes that would have kind of otherwise been fine. Like, yeah. Live and Let Die, a great song. And then there's like a weird like...
Yep.
Like, there's a
bridge
out of nowhere. And you're like, come on, Paul. That you're thinking about Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time.
Mm-hmm.
I've never listened to the second half of that song until a year ago because I hate it.
Yeah.
But if you get to the second half, there's a synthesizer solo.
No.
That's like, Paul McCartney, if you're listening, what the fuck?
Fuck you.
Fuck you. No, straight up, this podcast hates Paul McCartney.
Drake's better than the Beatles.
You heard it here first. But outside of that weird reggae bridge, I thought the song was great. When it's sung by the other singer in like the kind of cool, like funky style, the reggae bridge makes sense.
It does.
And it fits.
It sounds really good with her voice.
When Paul McCartney does it, it's insane.
Bad, bad, not good.
Bad, Bad, Not Good would have done a better version of it.
Oh, 1,000%.
But
it would have been with the woman.
Speaking of people who did a better version of the song, Guns N' Roses of Live and Let Die doesn't have a little reggae bridge. It is, in fact, the way the song should be, and it is much better. But
so fuck Paul McCartney.
That's a hot take. I would say this might be my favorite or second favorite Bond theme.
Better than Goldfinger. Diamonds Are Forever. Shirley Bassey is screaming.
Okay. Paul McCartney right now, as much as I have issues with this podcast, hates Paul McCartney. I would say so far, Paul McCartney, second best Bond singer. Shirley Bassey, number one so far. She has Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Insane.
Absurd.
I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Alex, what's like the most Bond moment from this movie for you?
Okay, so I definitely would say a top tier Bond moment. And this first one that I'll put out is mainly a Bond moment for us, I guess, is what I consider Bond to be at this point. James Bond and Solitaire are about to go on a train. And this guy's like, hey, you're about to go be on there for 16 hours. What are you going to be able to do in that time? And he just kind of, they look at each other and they're just like, we'll figure something out or something.
He goes, say goodbye to Felix.
Yeah, literally.
Wait, on the train.
Like, of course. And then they do have sex on boats. And so for me, that is James Bond. Mm-hmm. He also does take off a woman's dress with his watch because it can take down magnets. And we love that.
That was a pretty good James Bond moment. I would say the one-liners are pretty good. There's no stinkers in this one, which I liked.
I don't remember a lot of the one-liners.
At the end, he kills Kananga with an inflation bullet, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Kananga blows up to the ceiling and pops. And Solitaire's like, what the fuck just happened? And James Bond goes, he always did have an inflated opinion of himself.
Yup.
That's a good one. Also, a big Bond moment was when James Bond was having a little forest picnic with Rosie and they were kissing. Presumably, it sounds like they had just had sex.
100%.
They just had sex. And then he is like, I know you're a traitor. And I know that you're sneaking up on me. And she's like, why would you believe that I'm a traitor? You would threaten to kill me after we just had sex? And he's like, I wouldn't have threatened to kill you before we had sex, which is
thoughtful.
He's done this so many times. I mean, we know James Bond loves a trap. And he's like, I figured out that this woman is actively against me. Gotta smash.
Like, I'm not gonna have another opportunity. I will try to kill her.
I will have to get it in first.
And he already tried to fuck her before that. And she was like, yeah, I knew this was going to happen. So I got a separate room.
No, she said, Felix warned me this would happen. And he was like, what did Felix say? And she's like, he said, kill yourself.
Yup.
He said, take a cyanide pill if he tries to fuck you, which is like, whoa, Felix.
That is an intense sentence. It's just like,
Felix must have for a crush on James Bond.
Oh, 100%. Honestly,
honey, if he tries to have sex with you, just kill yourself.
The tension's been there since movie one.
It won't work. I'll leave it at that for Bond moments. Alex, what character from this movie do you think deserves their own spin-off film?
Okay, well, I'm going to say the character 100% that deserves their own spin-off film for me is the cab driver.
Yes.
The cab driver, we have him.
Wow.
And when we land in New York, we're getting a driver. It's the driver that takes James Bond from like Central Park to Harlem. And he's pretty much like, this is fucking crazy, my guy. And Bond bonds with him over giving him 20 extra dollars.
It was fun. He didn't get killed. He was so confident. He's just like, hey, Jimbo, I'm here to pick you up again. Whoops, idiot. Mm-hmm. He got in the same cab in two different cities and did not notice.
Yup. I imagine he just means that he's just a cab driver for this gang, but I would love to learn
that.
That's about
a great pick.
Thank you so much.
Wow. If I had a character of this movie, I would have his own film. It would be Baron Samedi.
Yeah.
I thought he was fascinating. I think he is a queer icon.
Mm-hmm.
He is, they described him as 9 feet tall, but he seemed like he was like 6'2".
Yeah, solidly.
He seemed like a normal guy, but at the
end... Gonna make Roger Moore taller.
Yeah, at the end of this movie, which has never happened before in a Bond movie, mm-mm, Baron Samedi rises from the grave. Turns out it's just a plaster mold of him that James Bond shoots apart, even though his eyes moved, which is a little suspicious. And the whole legend about Baron Samedi is he can't be killed. And then real Baron Samedi rises up from the grave next to the fake Baron Samedi. And then James Bond just kind of punches him once and pushes him into a coffin full of snakes. And then he gets bitten and dies. And then at the end of the movie, James Bond's making love on this train. And then it cuts to the front of the train. Baron Samedi's sitting on it laughing.
Bah, bah, bah.
And then it goes straight to credits, which is insane.
Amazing.
We've never had a stinger like that before on a Bond movie. And I just like... I don't think he said anything other than just laughing.
Yeah.
But he seemed like he was down for a good time.
It's a real Rasputin moment.
10 out of 10. Baron Samedi.
That's a good pick.
Both good picks all around. Alex, what would you rate this movie out of 10?
That's a great question. I'm going to give this movie... At the beginning of this, I was feeling a little bit lower, but after talking about it, I'm feeling better. And I'll give it a solid 7.5.
7.5, all right.
I liked a lot of the side characters. I think that the main guy was pretty entertaining. And yeah, I think it was a pretty good movie overall.
I like that. We're looking at our ratings from the previous films right now, and I feel like I should have changed my scale earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, no tipsy backsies. I'm going to give this one an...
You're going to give it an 8?
I'm going to give it an 8.5.
Whoa!
So technically, this is my favorite Bond movie that we've seen so far.
That's fair.
I don't know if I'm solid on that, because I... absolutely loved Goldfinger.
Yeah. You're going to be fucked when it comes to Daniel Craig movies.
No, shoot. You're right. All right. No, I'm sticking at 8.5 right now.
Definitely.
This is a fun movie. The villain's great. Roger Moore's pretty stinking good. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of all of this. Any last thoughts? Anything from your notes that you're like, we didn't talk about this? We didn't talk about when James Bond escaped an alligator pit by running across the backs of 6 real,
yes,
live alligators.
Yep.
To get to the end.
That was terrifying. I'll also say that there was a sick fucking burn by a solitaire in the beginning when they're flipping tarot cards. And he says, I'd like to find which card looks like me. And she says, flip a card. And the card says, the Fool. And she goes, guess you found yourself. Like,
that's pretty good.
Incredible. What a way to introduce a character.
That's, I love that. I love that solitaire is progressively in more and more ornate outfits.
Yup.
As the movie goes on. She
straight up has a desk that controls her crown and a cloak.
That was crazy. I also liked at one point, James Bond is talking to Felix through a microphone in the lighter of a car. And he goes, oh, a genuine Felix lighter. Which is... they've been sitting on that for like 6 movies.
How about when James Bond just straight up fishes in a whole middle part of the movie?
James Bond
and
just fishes.
Don't even care.
That's pretty great. And the last highlight, I think this movie, of any of the movies we've seen, does the best job of like playing music at the right times.
Definitely.
Like it had a great theme. It brought theme at the right moments in the past. Like from Russia with Love. The Bond theme would just be playing super loudly for no reason.
Yeah.
This one, like...
Or you just never heard the theme song until the very end.
Yeah. Like, we're getting... This is 73. Like, we're getting into... People have an idea of how to make movies now.
Yeah. And we're going to get some... I'm excited to see the direction that the rest of the Roger Moore movies go, because I feel like it might get kind of crazy.
I think it's going to be crazy. He has the most James Bond movies. Mm. So that's it for Live and Let Die. A strong intro for Roger Moore. Next time we're talking about The Man with the Golden Gun, which a little teaser for that one. There's a guy named Nick Knack and a secret island owned by a man named Scaramanga.
Okay.
So
get ready, folks.
Catch you next time.